and welcome back to Haz Matters, the Dangerously Good Hazmat Podcast, where dangerous goods experts share their insights on what's most important right now in the hazmat supply chain. I'm Jeff Siegel, a primary writer for the Label Master blog. Today, we're following up with Label Master Senior Manager Jay Johnson to talk about COVID-19 vaccines, test samples, and other essentials for shipping biological substances. Welcome back.
Hi, Jeff.
So last time, we left off by saying COVID-19 vaccines are not dangerous goods, but shippers will still have to comply with dangerous goods regulations in order to transport the vaccines. Can you explain why that is?
Sure. As we talked about before, the vaccines themselves are made from pathogenic material, but not infectious to humans. And the genetically modified microorganisms used to manufacture some vaccines are not regulated in transport because they don't pose a risk as genetically modified microorganisms. But the vaccines themselves have to be in very strict temperature parameters. And to maintain some of those temperature parameters, particularly the minus 70, minus 80 range, you're going to have to use dry ice to keep those vaccines cold. And dry ice is regulated as a dangerous good when shipped by air.
And what are the challenges of dry ice shippers?
Sure. Well, when you think of carbon dioxide solid, which is dry ice, it is carbon dioxide gas, that which you exhale, taken down to the temperature where it goes to a solid. A dry ice, again, is unique in the fact that it sublimates straight from a gas to a solid and has no liquid phase, hence dry ice. And dry ice is shipped all the time. This is nothing new. People who are in the pharmaceutical industry logistics, they move dry ice all the time. Dry ice packaging is available. Label Master sells lots of different types of dry ice shippers. But the news media has latched onto the fact that these ultra cold products are going to have to be on dry ice and dry ice poses a risk. It certainly does. When dry ice sublimates, it expands 600 times. So a small piece of dry ice puts out a lot of carbon dioxide gas, and that gas can displace oxygen. People like oxygen, they sometimes use it to breathe. And if there's no oxygen available, people can expire. It's regulated as a dangerous good by air because shipments were loaded with animals in planes. The dry ice would displace all the oxygen on board the planes and the animals would expire. So to prevent that from happening, they needed to regulate the amount of dry ice that was loaded in the plane and within certain areas. But dry ice does create some real problems. It is very, very cold, minus 78 degrees, something like that. If you touch it, it can burn you. If you put it in a non-vented container, it will explode. And this has been a problem for years. I used to do the training class for the clinical trials laboratories. And back when they used to use canisters versus bags, people would sometimes put dry ice in the canisters. The canisters would explode. And there were multiple holes in the ceilings where canisters exploded, shooting the lids through the ceiling. So you do have problems. Dry ice, if you put it in freezers, refrigerators, can mess with the equipment and cause them not to function properly. You put dry ice in a cold room, you can actually knock all the oxygen out of a cold room, which makes it very dangerous to go inside and get things out. When you're dealing with dry ice, you have to have proper ventilation. So when dry ice is going to be used to keep these vaccines cold, there's all sorts of concerns about making sure that the dry ice in the trucks is vented so when people go in to get boxes out, there's oxygen available to them. When they're storing the vaccine at the clinics and hospitals, if they don't have the minus 80 freezers and they're using dry ice to do that, that they're aware of the fact that as the dry ice sublimates to keep the vaccine cold, it's displacing oxygen and they need to make sure that it's well ventilated and the air is circulating so that they don't have non-oxygenated situations.
As you said, none of this is new to veterans of the pharmaceutical industry and cold chain veterans. You talk about the scale of distributing these vaccines, there are going to be a lot of people in that effort who are not familiar with these restrictions, with these safeguards, right?
Jeff, you're exactly right. For the pharmaceutical industry and the logistics specialists, moving dry ice is something that happens all the time. Things have to be kept cold. They have to move quickly. and dry ice is the go-to solution to keep things frozen in transport. So we move lots of dry ice, but never on the scale that we're currently discussing for vaccine distribution. We're talking, you know, millions and millions of doses to all the corners of the globe, and to keep them cold is going to require dry ice scale we've never seen before. So large volumes of dry ice in warehouse, large volumes of dry ice on trucks and trains and planes and boats are going to create situations where you're going to have people who are not properly training them in non-vented containers and they're going to explode. You're going to have situations where people are putting them in non-circulating areas, and so you're going to have concentrations of carbon dioxide gas, and people could be injured. So there's all sorts of handling issues here. You don't want to use the dry ice to keep your keg of beer cold because it will freeze your beer solid. I tell you this from personal experience. So there's things you need to think about.
We mentioned there's a distinction between COVID-19 vaccines and COVID-19 test samples. Test samples are extremely important also, but those are actually regulated hazardous materials. Can you explain the difference and what a shippers of test samples need to know?
Sure. And that's a great question. What you've just done is taken two things that have the adjective COVID-19 attached to them, but they're entirely different. COVID vaccines are a biological product or a medicine to treat and help people with a resistance or treatment for the COVID disease. Patient specimen samples are liquid from people who have the disease or are suspected of having the disease or being tested to see if they have the disease. So that has a pathogen in the biological product and as such would be regulated as a dangerous good. The World Health Organization regulates COVID-19 patient specimens. That's body fluid collected directly from a human or animal that is potentially infected with COVID-19. As a category B infectious substance. And the WHO regulates cultures of pure COVID-19 pathogen as a category A infectious substance. US has not harmonized with this. I just want to throw that out. And currently has classified the cultures of COVID-19 as category B, as well as the patient specimen samples of category B. So not only do you have dangerous goods, you have non-harmonized dangerous goods, where depending on where you're shipping from, could have different classifications under the current regulations.
Then real quickly, Jay, the test samples don't need to be shipped quite as cold as the vaccines, but can you real quickly describe the conditions under which they are shipped?
Sure. Well, I mean, again, infectious substances have specific packaging requirements, very defined packaging performance expectations. Category A, which is your deadly pathogens, have requirements for UN spec packaging, shippers' declarations of dangerous goods, the fully regulated gamut. The non-deadly pathogen category B classification has some marking requirements and triple packaging requirements and some basic training requirements. So there's training, there's packaging, there's hazard communication. From a temperature standpoint, it really depends on the lab and what temperature the lab wants the samples back at. Most of the patient specimen samples you see when they do a nasal swab, or a spit or a blood swab, are moving at ambient temperature. As we get into wintertime, though, some pathogens don't do well getting too hot. Some pathogens don't do too well getting too cold. I don't think too cold is going to be a problem. As a matter of fact, when they were first working on the testing for COVID-19 earlier in the year, the concern was that a lot of the samples would need to move refrigerated to prevent false positive and false negative results. But we've kind of moved away from temperature control to just more of a straight ambient for the patient sampling. So while the vaccine has very rigid FDA temperature requirements, normally to see what temperature the human specimen to be tested to see if a pathogen is present, you'll have to look to whatever the lab is using as their their key indicators to see if there is a temperature controlled requirement to those patient specimens.
Okay, so that's a ton of information, but it's all very important information, and that's why I wanted to just throw this out there. You are actually doing a webinar in January on vaccines, test samples, and other biological and cold chain concerns. Is that right?
That's right. I love to talk about packaging, and so we're gonna do a webinar on packaging and talk about both temperature control packaging and also infectious packaging. What are the requirements? What are the performance expectations? What does the manufacturer need to provide to you so that you can use the package correctly? And do packages work globally? Which is an odd statement, because under UN specification packaging, you can buy a package from anywhere and use it anywhere. But when it's not UN spec, you do into some issues with competent authority. I would comfortably tell you, in my opinion, that a Cat B packaging system in the U.S. Tested to U.S. standards would not meet the requirements in Canada and could not be used in Canada. So the assumption that any box that is Cat B can be used anywhere is really not true.
We will get details of the webinar as soon as they're available. But anyway, Jay, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. And again, I want to, if I could take a moment, the distribution of vaccine is an amazing event going on. And the dangerous goods aspects are one of many hurdles that the logistics experts are going to have to deal with. As they move these products both by air and by ground, and they move them from distribution center to locations where the vaccine is being distributed to the individuals. So there's all sorts of parameters, tracking requirements, multiple doses. So it is an amazing undertaking. And I think the people who are working on this have done an amazing job, and they really need to be proud, because, you know, it's easy to recognize the pharma companies for making the vaccine, but I think that the logistics specialists are really going to become the unsung heroes of this particular undertaking, because as you can see, lots of farmers can make the drug. It'll be interesting to see which of the farmers actually get it to the people correctly.
Yeah, it sure will be. And I'm with you 100% on that, Jay. That was Label Master Senior Manager Jay Johnson. For details from today's conversation, please visit labelmaster.com/podcast. And remember, you can get many of your DG shipping questions answered free at the Label Master Regulatory Hotline, 1-800-621-5808, 8 to 5 Central Time, Monday through Friday. Thanks for listening to HazMatters, the Dangerously Good HazMat Podcast.